So now we resume that earlier discussion of suction dredge mining in streams, this time with the people who do not want the practice to continue. They certainly have the upper hand at the moment. Suction dredging, basically river vacuuming in search of gold, is banned in California at the moment with no date certain for its return. And Oregon is about to put a 5-year ban on suction dredging in place starting January 2nd. Miners are unhappy and suing. We heard from them in a previous segment. Environmental groups are pleased and joining the lawsuits on the pro-ban side. Two guests join us. Nick Cady is the legal director at the group Cascadia Wildlands. Nick, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
And Jonathan Evans is with us as well. He's the Environmental Health Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. So for either of you, what is the major issue you have with suction dredging?
I guess there are several concerns. Go ahead, Nick.
I think the major issue here that everyone is focusing on is the impacts to salmon and salmon habitat. Salmon play a critical role in Oregon's economy, and it's kind of one of our iconic species that we as taxpayers have spent millions and millions of dollars upon restoring this habitat. And suction dredge mining is a incredibly destructive and harmful practice to these behaviors, and that's why our state legislature voted to regulate and restrict these practices in salmon, essential salmon habitat.
And Nick, is the Oregon ban pretty much the same as the California ban?
No, the Oregon ban is much more tailored to just areas that are officially categorized as essential salmon habitat.
And so are there maps? I mean, some places where motorized suction dredging will still be allowed?
Yes.
How extensive are those areas, though?
I think a lot of the areas that unfortunately tend to be targeted by the miners are areas that have kind of water flowing over them and have a lot of gravel substrate. And so those are areas that salmon are seeking out for breeding, and these are also the areas being targeted by the miners. But there are some areas still open to the miners in the state. So I think calling it a ban outright is a little bit of a misnomer.
All right. So what you're saying then, though, is if there are no fish present, and I think I saw this in the legislation anyway, if there are no fish present and no sensitive fish species, then that area is not affected by the moratorium?
Correct. I believe you're right.
All right. Jonathan Evans, when you think about the kind of activity that goes on in stream beds, what makes the action of a suction dredge different, for example, from a major storm churning up the stream bottom and stirring up a lot of gravel and sediment?
That's a good question. I think there are some substantial differences. You know, one is the type and nature of activity. You know, when I talk to people and tell them that aren't as familiar with suction dredge mining, that there are people out there vacuuming up riverbeds and then dumping the tailings back into the water bodies, they look at me with a shock on their face and say, can that be legal? And unfortunately, it is in some places. So there are a couple factors. I think Nick hit on the real big problem of disturbance of fisheries habitat. You know, when the miners are going in there, sucking up the riverbed, they're changing a lot of the insect and aquatic communities that are in the riverbed that are relied upon by salmon. They're also creating these big piles of tailings that end up being much less stable than they would be if they were at the riverbed. And when salmon, other types of steelhead or trout are laying their eggs in those areas, they end up being washed out a little more easily. There's also, I think, really importantly, significant water quality impacts, not just for the aquatic communities, but also for human health and for people that rely on these water bodies as sources of drinking water. Many of the studies that have analyzed the impacts of suction dredge mining, such as a USGS study from the South Yuba River in California, have found that the suction dredging actually increases substantially the amount of not only just sediment that's in the water body, but also mercury. When the miners went out there in the first gold rush, they used a tremendous amount of mercury that ends up getting laid deep in the beds. But when the miners go in with these suction dredge materials, they'll end up digging pretty deep into the riverbed, resuspending a lot of that historic mercury. And even at incredibly small doses can have a very significant impact on water quality. And some of the analysis found when California did the most comprehensive study of suction dredge mining, that even a single 4-inch dredge can discharge up to 10% of an entire watershed's mercury load. And I think it's important to look at the what these miners are doing and where they're doing it and how that's different than the standard flow that occurs in the water body. And the impacts aren't just to water quality. They're not just to fisheries. They're impacts to cultural resources. The coalition of conservation groups and fisheries groups in California was really taking a lead from the Karuk tribe in Northern California that had been fighting this issue for a long time. And a lot of the concerns for them was the impacts on their cultural sites. Many of the mining was occurring in ceremonial sites, disturbing archaeological sites. And it's just, if you can imagine, you know, someone coming into a place as sacred as a church and bringing a backhoe in during the middle of Mass and digging up in front of the altar, it was something that was really offensive because of the history, not only of the miners, but the impact to the sites themselves. And, you know, obviously this issue has brought together a whole coalition of groups that are very concerned about it and the impacts, not only just all of those issues, but the recreational users, such as rafters and fly fishermen. When you have this type of mining encampment, dirty, noisy activity in waterways, it ends up causing a lot of concern from the community.
Well, you know, I was asking the miners about that when we had them on in an earlier segment about this speaks in the Oregon ban to motorized mining. I mean, potentially you could still power a pump through some other means. If, I don't know if it's somebody riding a bicycle with a long belt or something, but this, you could still run a pump, just not with a motor. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. You know, there's types of mining that can occur that don't require motorized activities. Indeed, the all of the bans, not only in California, but the tailored rule that Nick talked about in Oregon has exceptions. Non-motorized activities such as hand panning or non-motorized sluicing can be used. Also, you can even do in the upcoming 2016 moratorium, there's allowances for motorized mining as long as it is not in salmon and bull trout habitat. And there's still the ability for the miners to obtain a permit from the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries for mining upslope of the high water mark as long as they go through the proper system. So I think, unfortunately, we hear a lot of misinformation from the mining community about the breadth of the restrictions, and also I think the application of the law, and then what you have, I think, a real misinformation about the facts. You know, in California, which has done the most analysis of suction dredge mining, when they did the statewide environmental impacts report, they surveyed over 2,000 miners, or approximately 2,000 miners, in 2008 before the ban went into effect, and found that only 2% of the mining community did the activity commercially. It's about 79% were purely recreational, and about 19% did it as supplemental income. I think if these individuals are going out there and just doing this activity recreationally, they can really do it in a way that doesn't have these broader impacts on the fisheries that Oregon relies upon, that generate a lot of revenue and that are really critical for maintaining our wildlife habitat and maintaining the water quality that Oregonians and Californians need in these times where climate change and drought are a much bigger problem.
Jonathan Evans is the Environmental Health Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. Nick Cady is the Legal Director at Cascadia Wildlands. We're talking about suction dredging, about to go under a five-year moratorium in Oregon, most of Oregon, starting on January 2nd. California's had a ban in place since 2009. You can join this discussion at 800-838-3760 on the phone or at email jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take a call from Jeff in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, you calling, this is Jeff?
Yes.
First of all, I have dredged in the past, back in the 70s and 80s. I dredged in Northern California in the Salmon River. I went down to South America, dredged down there, and I understand the allure of it. It's very fun and exciting work, but also it's destructive to the stream environment. And one of the things I don't hear mentioned much is the destruction of the bedrock. That's the solid rock at the bottom of a stream or a river. The boulders and the sand and the gravel all sit on that, but the gold, being heavy, gets stuck in the crevices down on the bedrock. And most mining for gold, it depends on breaking up that bedrock, mm-hmm. destroying those crevices down there, to get at the gold. And that's where a lot of your little bugs and worms and things live. That's where a lot of animals and insects and things put their eggs.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is a stream is not, we talk a lot about the fish and about the salmon, but you have salamanders, you have frogs, you have insects and all that. Nobody's putting restrictions on when they do their spawning or when they could be impacted by dredging. So, you know, it's not just not disturbing the reds of a particular species of fish. It's when you get in there and you break up that bedrock and you suck up all that material. Sure, the fish might love it because they're eating the worms and things that are broken loose, but after that you have a pretty much clean bottom of a stream, and it takes a long time for that to come back. And
all right, thanks for that, Jeff. Appreciate it. So, Jonathan, this really gets right up to what you were talking about yourself, that, that it just changes things.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and I think Jeff brings up a good point that, you know, not only are they just sucking up the riverbed, there's a lot of activities such as wenching rocks out of the way, using rock bars to move the bedrock material. But also, it's important to recognize it's not just the fish that are impacted by this. When in the California Environmental Review, they found that there were significant environmental impacts to a range of listed and Endangered Species Act listed songbirds that require those riparian areas, particularly when they're nesting. So the species like the willow flycatcher and the least-billed vireo and the yellow-billed cuckoo, the activity of the motorized the dredge itself as well as the encampments was causing significant habitat disturbance. So it's not just in the river, it's on the side of the river and the activities that occur. So it is a lot broader than sometimes it's represented by the mining community.
All right, another call here from Mike in Yuba City, California, for Jonathan Evans and Nick Cady as we talk about the con side of suction dredging. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a concern about what is being said about salmon being disturbed by suction dredging. I know a couple of guys who were working with the fisheries department out of Humboldt State University, and I don't know them personally, but I spoke with them on the Trinity River one time. And I asked them what they thought about dredging. It's before I actually started doing it, but it was after the moratorium started. And they told me that it needed to come back. They blew me away by saying that, but they pointed out that most major rivers are dammed up at certain points, and during the spring, the floods don't wash the sediment down to bedrock like it normally does. So everything gets solidified down there, and I've since seen that because I did start dredging after the moratorium took effect. And it is solidified down there. The salmon come up there trying to spawn, which you can't dredge during the spawn anyway. So that's the argument.
All right, so you're saying the dredging restores a natural condition that the dams have blocked?
It does. It loosens up the sediment on the bottom so the salmon can bed down into it. Otherwise, the eggs just roll out and the steelhead come up and snatch them up.
All right, let's see what Jonathan knows about that. Thanks for the call.
Sure. You know, I think it's important to look to the studies that have been conducted, like by the Oregon Fishery Society, that really talked about the disruption of habitat from suction dredge mining, the impacts of water quality. Interestingly, we've been fortunate enough in some of the California cases to get declarations from Peter Moyle, who's one of the most preeminent fish biologists in California, really discussing the harms of salmon habitat. And the caller is absolutely right. You know, the dams have been horribly detrimental to salmon. But when you're throwing on additional impacts from suction dredge mining, I think it really isn't as accurate as it should be to really say that this type of mining, which is done in a very ad hoc fashion, not in a way that you really need to analyze how the dredging could be done to rebuild beds that are reds and riverbeds that are disturbed. You know, the miners aren't going in there with the mindset of let's target areas for restoration. They're going in there and let's target areas for mining extraction. And those are two different things. If it could be done in some sort of way where it's systematically analyzed by a fish biologist to determine if there would be a way to recreate beds, that may be a really good approach. But unfortunately, it's just done a little bit ad hoc and targeting where the gold occurs and where, unfortunately, where a lot of the historic mercury pollution occurs, not in a way that benefits salmon.
Another call here from Derek and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Nick Cady and Jonathan Evans.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm somewhat responding to the first segment just because the analogy of the home was used in the context of the conversation.
You could build your home, but you couldn't live in it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I just wanted to point out that I have a home, but I can't move in there and create a hog sty in the backyard. And I think that's important because to point out that, I mean, the hog sty case certainly predates the 1872 mining law, which you know, it's just funny. It's like they were concerned about takings, but what's being taken is salmon. I mean, and I guess that's what you're arguing about here, but I certainly don't need to study the laws of gravitational force to know that gravity is real. And if I, and I've been down the river and seen section dredging activity, and I don't know how anybody could even look at it and assume that it wouldn't harm fish in the river, period. So the taking concern I have is over the salmon, which technically, I guess, belong to all of us, if you want to put an ownership aspect on it. And I just wanted to make that point. The 1872 mining law is considered sacrosanct in some ways, but I liken that home aspect to putting a hog sty in your backyard.
All right. Thanks for that, Derek. Appreciate that. So, Nick, Katie, that whole enshrinement almost of the 1872 mining law, and I asked our guest, it seems like it almost it seems constitutional to you guys, but it can be amended. And it can be repealed. But their argument is that you got state law here with the state moratorium overlaying federal law. What do you say about that?
Right. The 1872 mining law was, you know, this law originally passed to encourage westward expansion and mineral development a long, long time ago. And there have been many, many laws passed since. The Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, and a number of laws that delegate authority to the states to regulate all sorts of activity that have implications on water quality and such on state land. And so the claim that this is some constitutional right to mine is just facially, legally ridiculous based on the fact that all these regulations take place. And I think it's important to examine the context of how we've arrived at this point of a moratorium, because we have originally, 2 years ago, passed a law that bought time for us to develop reasonable regulations on suction dredge mining, and that the miners really didn't come to the table in a meaningful way. And so that's why we've arrived at this larger ban, or just larger regulation, really.
All right, by 15 seconds left, what do you see emerging at the backside of the five-year moratorium?
Well, I think what we're working on now, currently in Salem, there's kind of bipartisan efforts at working on a reasonable legislative solution for this problem in Salem.
All right. We're talking to Nick Katie, Legal Director at Cascadia Wildlands, Jonathan Evans, Environmental Director of the Center for Biological Diversity. Thank you both for joining us to talk about suction dredge mining.
Thank you.